This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA reporter and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bon. Hope everyone's doing out well. Bit of a surprise episode here. Was not expecting to do a show today, but a lot has happened in the world of combat sports, and I thought, why not hop on here one more episode before the wedding week arrives here and I get totally crazy and kind of unplug for the coming days. Maybe one more sneaky show later in the week, but no promises here. But I thought, given Dana White's big news drop, three UFC title fights becoming official, a champion vacates and Zhang Weili, one of the most high-profile fights that can be made in the sport, Jack Della Maddalena and Islam Makhachev headlining UFC 322. Things we need to talk about here on the show. And of course, can't forget the event that kind of stole the headlines, stole the attention of the combat world over the weekend. Misfits Boxing 22 from Manchester. We see Dylan Danis get a return win in his MMA contest on the card. Then Tony Ferguson finally snaps the skid. Darren Till knocks out Luke Rockhold in the main event. All points worthy of discussion. No better man to do that with than our good friend here on the Bonfire. Mr. Dean Thomas will be returning to the show to talk about everything I just mentioned and a little bit more. To me, this is my gift to you on a slow week, something we can do here. And I hope it's some good listening for you all. So I appreciate Dean's time. Appreciate your time all watching. Of course, like, rate, subscribe, comment, all that good stuff. We'll see you on the other side of the break with Dean Thomas. All right, back here now on the Bonfire once again with one of our favorites here, Mr. Dean Thomas, coach, analyst, commentator extraordinaire now, Dean. I think we need to lead with that. You got your shot on Contender Series. I thought you did an awesome job. How did you feel? What kind of feedback did you get?
Man, I got good feedback. You don't get feedback from the UFC, but if you don't get feedback from the UFC, that's a good thing. But I got some pretty good feedback from the people in the industry. That's what makes me feel good. But I'm out in Atlantic City right now. I was commentating the CFFC last night. So it's not like it's my first time doing it. It's just my first time on that stage. And to get the feedback that I did get was pretty good.
Mm-hmm. How long had that been in the works?
They asked me to do that a couple months before.
Okay.
It kind of came up. I mean, but it came up quick because I forgot about it. They were like, hey, you ready for Contender Series? Like, wait, what? But I'm doing another one. I'm doing another one at the end of the season. Another one more at the end of the season. Just to let everybody know that I'm still alive. I ain't going nowhere. I'm still here.
Well, we see how it goes. This seems to kind of be the training ground for people who eventually want to get in the commentary booth for the UFC broadcast. Is that, you know, the dream of what this is ultimately hoping it leads to is calling fights from cage side?
Mike, absolutely not.
No?
That's the thing, man. Like, all these other guys, you know, Chiesa and Joe Bann and all these guys, that's what they want to do. Like, I think even Anthony Smith, like, their ultimate goal is to get on that pay-per-view and start calling some fights. And I'm like, dude, I don't care about that. I like chiming in every couple fights. I like working the desk. I mean, it's cool to do Contender Series. And if they gave me the opportunity to work a real show, I would put my heart and soul into it. But it's not the goal.
Okay. Yeah. You like what you're doing. You're comfortable in your role. Yeah.
I'm comfortable in my role. And I'm comfortable coming on this show. I'm comfortable in my life.
There we go. We love to see it. Well, yeah, you're very comfortable here, Dean. I know the last time you were here, you had some things to say about Khamzat Chimaev that I think people didn't love too much, but I don't know. How do you feel? We got to start with that. He's the champion, but, like, you know, I think the dream scenario would have been if he did fight in Abu Dhabi and make that turnaround, that, like, squashes all the stuff. But that's clearly not happening now. We're getting Fluffy and RDR and all that stuff. I don't know. How do you feel about what the Khamzat Chimaev title reign is going to look like now?
You know, I'm not really on the internet all that much, but this was one thing that just attacked me. I'm like, yo, I did say that, but I thought that was obvious. I thought everybody felt that way. Apparently, people didn't feel the way I felt about Khamzat, like, and his frequency. So then when he won, And people thought I didn't want him to win. Like, I predicted him to win. I think he's the better fighter. So when he won, I'm like, all right, cool. And then he said he's going to fight in Abu Dhabi. And I'm like, come on. Come on. So then I made a comment about that. And I just read something recently about UFC analysts that said Khamzat Chimaev was lying about fight. I was like, I might have said that too, but I didn't mean it that way. But it is what it is, man. I'm just saying he's a great fighter. But the idea of him being a great champion in terms of defending the belt a lot, I still don't see it happening. And the fact that he said he wanted to fight in Abu Dhabi, and as soon as he said that, like almost right afterwards, they booked Fluffy and Rainer de Ridder, and they knew that they had Kyle Bahio and Imavov in the fight. So that takes him out of October automatically. So I just didn't see any real authenticity in him fighting in October. Who knows when he fights again?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what we're all waiting for. It'll be telling. I think you're justified in your stance until we see what happens. If he fights in January or February, then great signs. If we don't see him till summer or, God forbid, next fall, then that's going to be a problem. So,
because it holds everybody up, man. People don't understand. The problem is they see what I'm saying about the one guy. But for me, I'm speaking for all the guys behind him that want an opportunity. I'm speaking for Fluffy, who wants a shot at the title. I'm speaking for Rainer de Ridder, who wants an opportunity to fight for the championship. And these guys don't really get to say it, so I'm going to say it for him. Hey, man, we need you to move, dog, because these other guys want the opportunities.
Yep, Nassourdine Imavov as well if he wins. So, yeah, this division's too good to not have that title defended like twice a year. So we will see what happens now. But I don't know, Dean, it's a very busy time in the sport. I wasn't planning on doing a podcast this week because I'm actually getting married on Saturday. So,
why you ain't tell me, man? Where are you getting married at? I would have pulled up.
Out here in Toronto, it's a pretty small thing. We're hoping for good weather, but it was so busy. Dana did that announcement drop, and there's big fights, you know, being made. And then we can't not talk about the Misfits event that happened on Saturday out there in Manchester. Let's start with the actual only MMA fight that was on the card. I know he's a polarizing person, Mr. Dylan Danis, but I don't know what that guy was doing. He got cracked with a shot and then went for a takedown and got choked instantly. But I don't know, like, people hate on Dylan, rightfully so, in a lot of times, but he actually got in there. He fought an MMA fight and he won. So
yeah, but who was the guy he fought? Okay, exactly. Yep. You gotta add that into it. You don't know who this guy was. That doesn't take away from Dylan's jiu-jitsu ability. Mm-hmm. We can't take away from that because he's very good at jiu-jitsu. In MMA, no one knows how good he is. I'm more willing to bet that he's probably not in MMA, but if he fights guys who don't know how to fight, he's probably going to win every time using jiu-jitsu. So it's always going to make him look good if he fights guys who don't know how to fight, but I'm not sure we'll ever get to see him at a high level. He just doesn't have the level. I don't think he has the level of professionalism to fight at a high UFC level, to show up to the UFC on fight week and fight a really good guy. I don't think he has the level of professionalism to do that. Now, to fight a low-level guy on a Misfits card that everybody's just kind of tuning in and he can make some money this way, it's easy to do that, man. It's easy to do that. But to show up to a UFC, I know that might be his goal ultimately, but to show up to a UFC, it takes a completely different level of professionalism. And I'm not sure he has that.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, for a guy who's 2-0 in MMA, like, I can understand these are the type of fights. In theory, if it was just a random 2-0 fighter, like, this level of opposition, similar records, things like that. But we know he puts himself out there a lot and says a lot of bold stuff. So it's tough. You got to see the bigger fights at some point. But yeah, I don't know if he could clean up the act to the point of being professional. Do you think the UFC would give him a chance? Like, would you like to see what he could do against some welterweights?
I mean, I guess I would. I mean, I think he called out Nate Diaz, which would make some sense. And I might even tune into that. And it would probably, like, stylistically work out in his favor stylistically, because, you know, he might be able to take Nate down and it would turn into a jiu-jitsu match. And it would be kind of not an easy fight for him to hang out in. I'm not sure. I don't think he would win the fight, but it'd be better for him a fight like that, as opposed to like a guy who he couldn't take down, who's going to rip his head off. So to call out Nate Diaz is a smart move for him, because he could turn it into more of a jiu-jitsu type match. And that might be the best high level, especially a 40-year-old Nate, that might be the best high level fight we see him in.
Yeah, that could be possible. Nate Diaz said the other day at the Dirty Boxing thing that he's looking to fight someone, but there's nothing that's interesting to him. So I don't know, maybe they could make it worth his while. But the fight that maybe it seems like they're angling towards is the man who fought just after him. Finally, Dean, 6 years later, Tony Ferguson gets a combat sports win. TKO Salt Poffy. I know some people didn't love the stoppage, but how can you not be happy for the guy? Then he faces off with Dylan Dennis. So I don't know. Like, it's, they're doing their own thing over there in Misfits. We know what these guys are at this stage in their career, but man, it felt good to see Tony get a win in something.
Yeah, I mean, you're right about this. He deserves that. You know, for all the years that Tony Ferguson has given us of just violence and just being a role model to that style of fighting. And I'm an advocate of that. That style of fighting that Tony Ferguson had, just violent, stepping up, fighting whoever, beating them up. I'm an advocate of that. And Tony Ferguson led the charge on that for many, many, many years. But then obviously after the Justin Gaethje fight, he just never was able to rebound. And it was sad to see him dwindle away into what he had become. So for him to get a win, I'm okay with him getting this win. And we'll talk about it maybe when we talk about Luke Rockhold. But, you know, I just don't like seeing older fighters fight. But for him to get this win, I don't know who Salt Poffy is. Maybe a DJ or something? I have no idea who he is. But I'm sorry, Salt Poffy, that you had to be the guinea pig in this situation. You had to be the food for the dragon in this situation so that Tony Ferguson can get a win.
Yeah, I think just seeing the reaction of the whole combat sports community, I mean, it feels good for Tony. He was in some dark times there, so good for him. And yeah, maybe they do that fight with him and Dylan Dennis. I think that was supposed to happen in the GFL, did not come to fruition, and now they're both there in Misfits. Seem like they respect each other, so I don't know. It's something. I mean, if you can create a little traction in organizations like Misfit on a weekend like this where there's no UFC, like, I think this is the biggest win you can kind of ask for, is like a promotion trying to exist outside of the UFC space. And then we saw, of course, in the main event there, Luke Rockhold knocked out again by Darren Till. It's tough, man. His chin has always been something that's kind of been his biggest detriment, right? The skill has always been there in MMA and everything he's done since the Strikeforce days, but this has been his constant Achilles heel.
I had a problem with this. My biggest problem with this whole thing is, When do we step in and just not allow guys to fight? I know it's hard, but it was so sad to watch him get knocked around this way. It was like when he got knocked out, it was just like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. And he got dropped before that. And it was so sad to watch Luke Rockhold get tossed around this way. And it just made me think, you know, we in the MMA space, we oftentimes like to make criticisms towards a lot of different things. But you start, the judges, the refs, the Ali Act, fighter pay. But a big issue for me is just not allowing guys to fight. Like, at what point do we step in and say, you guys can't fight no more? Because at what other professional level sports endeavor do we allow guys to play that can't do the job?
Yeah.
Football, but if you can't do the job, you can't play. Now, here's the thing. There's no interest or invested interest in letting Luke Rockhold fight for me. So, yeah, of course I'll let him fight. I don't care if he loses. It doesn't matter. Now, I'm not going to let him. I wouldn't let him play on the Buffalo Bills if he couldn't do the job, because there's an invested interest in the team winning. So it's kind of sad that we just kind of take advantage of fighters this way, that because we're not invested in them financially or any other means, do we just allow them to fight even when it's too late? There's got to be a point where we say, where a commission steps in and says, you're not fit to fight this fight. You should not be fighting. And I think this was a situation where Luke Rockhold should have not been fighting that fight.
Yeah, I truly don't know what you do about it. I mean, obviously, these are human beings. They have free will. But like, I literally, Frankie Edgar, who is going to be fighting in BKFC, did an interview with MMA Junkie Radio yesterday that I wrote up. And this was his quote, Dean: my close family definitely was against it, me coming back, for sure. My wife, my kids, my parents. But I talked them into it, I guess you could say, at least enough for me to get the OK. I don't know if I got their blessing, but I got the OK.
That's my point, right? A commission should step in and be like, you're not allowed to. Yeah. You're not allowed to compete in these organizations. Well, so like, that's for me, like, that's the one thing about the UFC, if you're not fit to do the job, they're going to cut you.
for the most part. There's obviously the, you know, the BJ Penns, thing.
Right. Like, I mean, but eventually they get cut. You know what I'm saying? Eventually they get cut. But then they can also always go to another organization and continue to fight, which to me is like, I don't know, man. I don't have the answer. Mike, I'm telling you, I don't have the answer. But I think that there's smarter people out there than I am that can come up with a better answer to say, you know, there's got to be a place, you know, even for football, you know, there's flag football league. There's got to be a place where these guys can still compete. But to get knocked around like that is so sad and it's unnecessary and it's bad for their health. Because that's how people really get hurt. And the fact that he went out there and did that, I was like, yo, he should not be fighting. He's got me.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Frankie Edgar should not be fighting. Mm-hmm. It's sad.
Yeah, and as we know, there'll always be someone out there, I guess, willing to pay these guys. And I guess when you're evaluating your how much you're willing to take that risk, like, you know, how much is it worth for Luke Rockhold to go in there again and potentially get knocked out? Like, I don't know what his number is or what that makes him feel good and his family and all that. But yeah, this has been a problem forever, right? Like, look at Bob Sapp lost like 20 fights in a row by TKO. He was still getting booked. We see Melvin Gallard out there. He's lost like 14 fights.
That's my point.
He's getting booked.
That's my point. Yeah. That's a big issue for me. That's a huge issue for me. It's not these frivolous quibbles that we have all the time that everybody likes to, this guy, no, they don't pay enough. I'm like, dude, we're still allowing guys like Melvin Gillard to fight. We're still sanctioning that. That should not be allowed to happen.
Yeah. And I mean, I think you would hope, right? Someone like Melvin Gallard, who has, I think, like among the most knockouts in lightweight history, fought like 20 times for the UFC. I guess the critic would say you would hope you would have made enough money during that career to where people wouldn't have to do this after the fact. And it also ties into the complaints you're making. So it's the whole infrastructure of the entire business, which you can't change at the snap of a finger. So I don't really know what you can do about that.
Yeah, so. I don't have the answer, but I think that with enough minds, we can come up with a better solution that the guys don't have to fight, or just not be allowed to. Like, even if you want to, you shouldn't be allowed. Like, when you get cut from the NFL, I'm sure you don't want to, but you're just not allowed to play.
Yeah. And then maybe you have to go to the CFL or something, or the Arena League if you like really want to keep going. But yeah, there's still a level you have to pass there too. So it's tough. We could talk about this forever. It's just the way it is. But on the other side of the coin, Darren Till, you know, he was the one who delivered that knockout. His post UFC journey has been kind of up and down and all over the place, but I thought this was a big moment for him. But yeah, you don't really know what to make of a win over Rockhold in 2025, but he seems like he's got something going for him outside the UFC right now, Darren Till. And it makes me kind of happy to get a win too.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely built upon his name and his momentum. And it's not often the guys outside of the UFC can continue to still stay relevant. And he's done a good job staying relevant outside the UFC. It's very rare, but he's one of the cases that's been able to do it. So I give him props for that. I know how hard it is to, you know, leave the UFC and then still people care about you. It's not all that easy to do it, but he's been able to do it. So props to him for that.
Yeah, I'd like to see. He always says he wants to be back, like his goal, you know, when he left and, you know, parted ways with Hunter and Dana, they said you could be back here one day, and he seems to believe that. But I don't know. I don't know if this is a better path for someone like Darren Till to do these kind of fights than come back and fight all these killers at middleweight.
It's just this is a better path.
Yeah.
I tell people all the time, it's like some people just are not UFC material. It's not a negative thing. It's just, when you're in the UFC, you should be in the UFC because you want to be the best in the world and you are on a path, and that's your vision and that's your path. It's like you got blinders on to a championship. And if you don't have that, you should be in another organization. Like the PFL is perfect for some guys. Like Impaka Sungani is perfect for the PFL. Like, it's perfect for these guys. And that's where they should be. They're not UFC level material in terms of being able to do all the media and worried about ticket, you know, being able to sell tickets and getting eyeballs on them. They just want to fight. So it's perfect for them. And some organizations, it's perfect for are perfect for certain fighters, and some fighters are UFC level material, and you never know until they get there.
Yep, very true. Well, UFC level material, we got some of the best that they could put together when Dana White announced all those fights earlier in the week. Three title fights, Dean, five massive matchups. I guess let's start in chronological order here. I guess UFC 321, the return of Umar Nurmagomedov after his title fight loss to Merab in January, fighting Mario Bautista, who keeps getting big opportunities and keeps winning them. So an interesting fight here. I know at one point they talked about this being a main event, I think in Vancouver, ultimately ends up being a three rounder in Abu Dhabi. Do you like this matchup? Do you think this is the right way to go for both these guys?
Well, I think it's a great matchup. It's the right way to go for the division. Divisionally, it's a perfect matchup for both guys because they're in a position where it really makes sense for both guys. However, for Mario, I'm not sure this is the fight that's really going to put him over, even with a win. That's the problem with Mario, is that there's not a lot of guys that he can beat that's going to put him over. You know, there's something about him. He's just so quiet. And there's just something about him that no matter who he beats, it's hard to put him over. And I think he's a great fighter. And I do think that there's a possibility that he can even win this fight. As good as Umar is, like, Mario might be able to put some heat on him. But even with a win against Umar, especially because it's not a main event, it still might not put him over. And you still overlook him and you still go, okay, Piotr Jan and Corey Sandhagen and all these other guys, like the other quote-unquote sexy guys in the division. Mm-hmm. And even Umar is still a sexy guy in the division. He's just probably not the guy that Mario Bautista can beat to put him over. Very difficult for him to get over on this one. But in terms of Umar, I think Umar is going to be Umar regardless. When you have that name, Nurmagomedov, no matter what you do, if you win, you're still the guy. If you lose, who knows what happens to him? I'm not sure what happens to him. But if he wins, he's still the guy and he's still right up there.
It'll be really interesting for Umar. I mean, we never saw Khabib lose in the UFC. We haven't seen Usman lose in PFL. And of course, I think we saw Abu Bakr Nurmagomedov take a few losses in the UFC. But in terms of these guys who have made it to the championship level, all that stuff, like it'll just be interesting to see how he digests that, like such a rare loss for this team and this family, and how he comes back from that. Like, that's my biggest question mark around this. Will it level him up, like going that five rounds with Merab and being that like a round or two away from getting that belt, or is that going to take something away from him? It's an interesting question.
I always wonder how that worked with you call him Abu Bakr, or I call him Abubakar. I don't know. I think it's Abu Bakr. But I always wondered how that worked. Like, at the family reunion, were they looking at him sideways like, yo, man.
what was that video? They took away his Xbox or something?
Yeah, like, yo, this dude losing in the UFC, man. What you doing? Yo, cut that out. Nah. I think they understand the game, and eventually the game is going to catch up to them, just like it caught up to every trend in MMA gets caught up to eventually. And we might have seen it now because the gap keeps getting closer and closer and closer and closer to the Dagestani wrestling. And I think it's getting closer. And with a loss here, and it's very possible that he could lose, that Umar could lose. And with a loss there, I think that they'll just accept it and be like, yo, we just need to work harder to catch up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Mario could maybe get his shot if Merab just keeps beating everyone. Like, he's just going to be the top contender by default because everyone else has already lost. But we'll see how that shakes out if he wins. But do you still think, given what we saw out of Umar and Merab in January, like, is Umar the toughest test and the biggest threat to Merab's title reign at this point still?
Yeah, I still think so. I mean, when you think about it, and the general consensus was that Merab played so many games that he kind of swayed the judges in close rounds. Mm. So we tend to might look at that fight differently than it actually was. Like, when we think about it, go, oh man, Merab beat him, then we tend to think that he might have shut him out. But it might have been closer than it actually was. So, and Umar has such a really good skill set that after feeling Merab and knowing what Merab is about, he still might be the biggest threat to Merab's reign. That's if Corey can't do it. I think I've always thought Corey was going to be the biggest threat, so I still think Corey might be the biggest threat. Outside of Corey, Umar might be the biggest threat.
Yeah, you need Corey to be the biggest threat for your championship draft, Dean.
I know. Oh my God.
We're a few months away. We're going to do that review again in December and see how things shook out there. So that's
Mike. I'm so bad at this.
No, you did. You're great. I think you did better than me so far. But holy cow, has there been a lot of title turnover and a lot? I mean, most of them vacating, and that leads us into the co-main event of UFC 321, a vacant women's strawweight title fight between Verna Jandiroba and Mackenzie Dern. Of course, Zhang Wali moving up to flyweight to fight Valentina Shevchenko. We'll get into that, but I don't know. Are you surprised how this played out? Like, I get it. You're going to make Ilya Topuria vacate. You're going to make Islam. Those are deep divisions with big fights that can be made, but like, I don't think anyone would have had a problem if Zhang Wali kept the title and it was a champion versus champion thing in November, but instead we get this.
Yeah, it's weird that I think that we tend to look so little and think so little of the female strawweight division that no one really cared that they did this, and no one really cared or even is making that big of a deal about Verna Jandiroba and Mackenzie Dern fighting for a title and Whaley moving up, because that's the fight we wanted to see anyway. Whaley and Valentina, that's such a big fight that no one cares what's going to happen to the strawweight division. And it's like, yeah, no one really cared. It's like, oh, just make Verna and Mackenzie Dern fight. It's whatever. But I'm not surprised that they made it happen. I mean, it is the next best fight for the women's strawweight division. And that is the second between Weili Zhang and Valentina Shevchenko. It is the second most important women's fight that you could make in women's MMA right now.
More so than Amanda and Kayla?
No, it's the second, not the first. It's okay. The second. Kayla's the first. Amanda and Kayla's the first. The second is Valentina and Weili.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think, I mean, the UFC brass, I'm sure, wanted a title around Mackenzie Dern's waist since day one. We know she's promotable and all that stuff. Do you think this is her best chance to get her hands on a UFC title? She already beat Verna. I know it was several years ago. She has the 5-round experience now. Like, I would have not loved Mackenzie's chances if she fought Zhang Wali, but this one feels very winnable for her. She already won this fight.
Yeah, she already won this fight, and I think As long as she's focused, and we've seen her have fluctuating levels of focus in the past, which gave us fluctuating results. But as long as she's focused, she should win. You know, as long as she's in the gym with Perillo, I think her and Perillo are just such a good matchup. Like, he's so good for her. I said that on the broadcast once. It's like, when she wasn't with him, it was noticeable. Yeah. And it's not always that case with fighters, but it was so noticeable when she wasn't with him. As long as she's with him, I think she wins this fight fairly easily, because I think that she's has a cleaner jiu-jitsu style, and I think she's better on the feet when she's with Jason Perillo. So I think if I'm the UFC, I'm like, hey, listen, we need you to win this fight, so make sure you're so I don't know if you need that some extra money.
She is with him. I actually talked to Perillo on like Friday right after this was made, and he said they were just sparring, and they sat and talked for like an hour and a half after the session about everything to do with this, and she seems very locked in. So these are good signs on that side from the Mackenzie Dern side. Oppositely, is Verna Jandiroba going to be a tough sell as a UFC champion if she wins?
Boy,
she's very good and a very nice person, but it's a tough one.
Yeah, that's a tough sell. And just, you know, you don't want to be mean and say anything mean about it, but it's just a tough sell. I mean, there's not a lot of relatability at all with Verna, with an MMA, the MMA population. Just not a lot of relatability, which is going to make it harder for her to sell. So I'm assuming that if Verna does win, they're going to have her fight back to back to back to back just to kind of wear her down so that she eventually loses that belt to somebody.
Yeah, and I don't even know who that somebody would be. I mean, strawweight's in a bit of a tough period right now. So
I think there's a Canadian that I know.
Yeah, who's been good at strawweight.
We in the lab with Jillian, man, working daily. People don't know, man. We working as if she in camp always year round. She in camp year round. So we're just waiting for the opportunities.
Yeah. Who do you think she gets? Like, is it going to be someone like a Loopy or Amanda Lemos, Yasmin Lucindo? Like, are we going to see one of those fights, you think? Someone in the top seven?
Yeah, I think so. We talked to Mick, and normally I'm like, yo, fight whoever. But in this situation, I was like, yo, we'll wait even a little longer, but just have her fight up, because we want to try to get this opportunity. So Mick said that she hopefully could fight in December. So we're looking at a December date against whoever. But she's ready. She's ready to make a run. These runs don't come around often. They don't last long. So when they come around, you got to be on point.
For sure. Do you think Wally's done at strawweight, or if she loses, does she go back down and fight the winner of this?
Actually, I think if she loses, she comes back down. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's not a large human being. I think she comes back down if she loses. And I'm not even sure how long she stays up there if she does. I mean, it depends. Like, if she feels good there, she might stay there. But she's pretty short. And I'm not sure how the weight cut's going to affect her physically, mentally, and emotionally. But I'm willing to bet that she might come back down regardless.
Yeah, and let's just get into that one, I guess. We can, we'll talk about Leon Edwards and Pratchez at 322 in a sec, but let's stick with the women's side. Great fight. I mean, to me, this might be the most skillful women's fight in UFC history. Like, there's been bigger ones, obviously, Ronda Rousey, Amanda Nunes, all that stuff, but like, skill for skill, talent for talent. You know, maybe Nunes and Cyborg can match this, but this, they're like, you know, two trucks out there. These two are much more refined and, you know, skillful, I would say.
Yeah, it's right up there. It's top five for sure. Yeah. But you said Nunes, Cyborg, Nunes, Shevchenko. Yeah. I mean, so to me, that might be top one. Nunes, Shevchenko, Nunes, Cyborg, and then maybe this one. So top three. But it's up there. This is a really good fight in terms of what you want to see from an eye test in terms of technicality with MMA. But with that being said, It could turn into a boring fight because of that, especially with Valentina's new style, right? Valentina is sort of adopted this more less risk, safety first style, and that tends to lead to more boring fights. So we might see a boring fight in this. For the technicians out there, it'll be beautiful, but for the fans, we might be on the side like, "Yo, hurry this thing up, get to the main event."
There's Valentina knows how to win, of course. She's one of the best we've ever seen at that. But yeah, there's her risk management has become obviously a bigger part of her game at this stage. I could see this maybe, and you look back at like the Rose and Wally fight, I know a lot of scrambles there, but like you see the success Valentina's had with takedowns and some of the challenges Wally's had. I know she looked incredible against Tatiana Suarez, so maybe she shored that up, but obviously Valentina's a whole different force from that.
And I'll say this though, Valentina's not wrong for taking this approach at this point in her career, which she should be doing. As you get older, you have to have a more, like, you don't want to be all punchy until it's time to be punchy. Now, when it's time to be punchy, when you start losing, then I say, hey, listen, then you can go ahead and get knocked around a little bit till you retire and then never come back again. Sure. But where she's at in her career right now, she still has the ability to win fights at a very high level. And if she can do that without taking a lot of damage, she should. So I think she should maintain that approach. She's going to have to be a little bit more of a dog in this fight, though, because I think if Wei Lee starts to try to turn this into a dog fight and Valentina don't match that a little bit, she might be in trouble.
Yeah, it'll be super interesting to see just what happens stemming from this fight, too. Like we said, could Wei Lee go down? Would Valentina get an immediate rematch if she lost here? If Valentina wins, does she try to go for her second belt thing? Like, I think her versus the winner of Amanda and Kayla would be a big fight on the women's side. The size difference between her and Kayla would be very interesting to see. But
I didn't even consider that. Like, that wasn't even a consideration of mine could possibly be an option. But that would be crazy.
I mean, these are the times. It feels like we can be honest, women's MMA has felt very dry in the past like year or so. They haven't had like these big marquee fights. If they can get this one done and then Amanda and Kayla, maybe late in the year, early in the next year, like it feels like we're getting some momentum in terms of big time fights on the women's side.
Well, I hope so. I mean, there was a time where I thoroughly enjoyed watching women fights. I mean, they were just, and actually I was in the gym because I coach women, a lot of women. And I was like, I'm not sure what happened. I'm really not sure what happened to women's MMA, how it just became so stale. Like, they stopped taking chances. They stopped fighting with their heart. Like, there was a time where women fought with their heart first. And I think it might be just due to maybe now they're getting too much attention in the gym. Because before, they was fighting to get attention in the gym. And they was fighting hard. They go in fights and be fighting hard. Now it's like they go in fights and just skate by. I'm not sure what happened.
Yeah, it's a weird spot when pretty much every women's MMA fight, like the over for three rounds is like minus money. You know, like
yeah,
we're just gonna get a decision, which is a tough spot to be in.
Yeah, I always say that too. Like, if there's, when it comes to picking and predicting fights, I'm always about 500, and I can Christmas tree that. I'm always about 500. But the one thing I'm almost always right about is the women's over and under.
Yeah, it's a parlay, clearly a parlay move. If you get three women's fights on one card, just do the other. Sometimes you'll be surprised. I did that in the last one, and then Priscilla Cachoeira got a knockout in like a minute, and I felt dumb. So,
oh yeah, so, Jocelyn Edwards, right? Jocelyn Edwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was a possibility. That was those were power punchers actually. So that one didn't surprise me that it went under.
Sure, fair enough. All right. Anyways, we move on. UFC 322. This one I think was like, I feel like everyone kind of knew the fights Dana was going to announce. Like generally there'd been rumors. I don't think we knew this one was happening on this date. Of course, Carlos Prochus called out Leon Edwards after that knockout of Jeff Neal that he had. But this is a great fight to put on this card. Huge stakes at welterweight, and I guess the lead of this story and this fight has to be just Leon Edwards, right? Like this is a must win scenario if he wants to remain a championship level contender.
Yeah. And I'm so happy for this fight for Leon Edwards, because now he's got a guy who's not going to be looking to take him down, where he can showcase his stuff. And if he's made of what I think he's made of, he can showcase his stuff. So I'm really happy that he's got a guy who's going to stand in front of him and strike with him, because now we can see what he's really capable of. Because the last couple of fights, you know, it's been guys trying to take him down. Brady taking him down. Usman trying to take him down. So you know, all the criticism, even Kobe's, like, so all the criticisms that I've had of Leon Edwards have been due to guys just putting grappling pressure on him and him just kind of breaking from that. But now he's got a guy who's going to be in front of him, who's tall, long, striker. Now he can go out there and show the world if he's capable of doing what he says he is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, Leon Edwards has run Sean Brady, Bilal Muhammad, Colby Covington, Kamaru Usman twice, Nate Diaz, that's kind of the outlier in terms of a striker, someone who wanted to strike, then Bilal Muhammad again, Rafael Dos Anjos, and Gunnar Nelson. So, like, this has got to be a gift from the gods to fight a guy who wants to strike with you.
Yeah, and I didn't even go that deep into the history, but when you go that deep into the history, it's years and years and years of defending takedowns and trying to set up for strikes. And that's extremely difficult to do in terms of distance management, being in the proper stance to defend takedowns as well as strikes. But now you got a guy who's just going to stay in front of you. So I'm interested. To me, this fight is the best fight announced. Yeah. This is the fight that's got me most excited for the rest of the year.
Yeah, and just a huge opportunity for Prochus, man. Like, he's been, I feel like they wanted to push him since day one. He's got big opportunities. Like, this is one of those weird spots, right? Like, how the sport goes. You would think with a win here, he jumps ahead of Ian Garry in terms of being like a high profile, like maybe closer to the title, even though he lost to him not that long ago.
And I'm telling you, there's something to be said about frequency.
Yep.
I try to tell these guys, man, you got to be frequent. You can't sit in politic and talk your way into a title shot because you feel entitled to it. It doesn't work that way, especially when there's other, like, it may work for some guys if there's no other competition, but when there's other guys that are right along the side of you to say, hey, listen, I won here, and I'm willing to fight, you can't sit on the side and be like, man, I deserve a title shot. No, you got to get out there and prove it. And Carlos Prochus, even though he lost to Ian Garry, is like, yo, I'll bounce back from that. Just give me another fight. I'll bounce. And if he beats Leon Edwards, he can make a strong case.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, you know, we're not trying to put him ahead of your boy, Sean Brady, there. He's deserved an opportunity. But he said, you know, kind of rightfully so, that this whole, as we'll get into now, Islam Makhachev versus Jack Della Maddalena headlining UFC 322. You know, Sean Brady said, like, Islam moving up has basically effed up the whole division and the natural order of things and all that. So, like, you know, someone like Sean, he should be ahead. Obviously, he finished Leon Edwards, and that came prior to potential Carlos Prochus wins. So, I don't know. This division is kind of messy right now.
It is kind of messy, but it just comes down to real world problems of not everybody plays by the same rules and we're not all treated the same, because Islam was Islam on the run he had, you know, the history of his team that is attached to his name allows him to just jump up a division and get a title shot right away. It just allows him those luxuries. And it may not be fair to the rest of the division, but that's just the way it is. And that's just the way it's going to happen. And these guys do have to understand that. They have to understand that. And the only way around that is to fight and beat people up and to be undeniable. And that was something that I actually had a conversation with Charles Johnson about before. Because, you know, Charles Johnson, like, Charles Johnson has been, you know, he, for as good as he is in the run he's had, and he's been off on the back shelf. Like, you would think that this guy was terrible. You'd think he was on the chopping block. But the fact that he took that fight in China and knocked out Lonnie Kavanaugh, I said, I hit him up after the fight, man. Dude, I'm so proud of you for doing that, for stepping up and beating that kid. And I like Lonnie. I think Lonnie Kavanaugh was going to be champ. And the fact that he fought him and knocked him out is the only way to make yourself undeniable in this game. You can't sit on the side. You can't get on Twitter and start talking trash about the promotion. The only way to do it is to fight people and win.
Preach. Yeah. I mean, look at Lerone Murphy. He is going to get a title shot, most likely, for a knockout over technically an unranked featherweight. You know, Aaron Pico is not ranked coming in, but as Dana White said, every time he comes to that press conference, I sell holy shit moments. And if you can make a moment, that's can do more for you than having a blood and guts split decision win over a fighter who might be number one ranked.
And you also don't make holy shit moments on Twitter.
No.
So you got to get out there and fight.
Correct. Well, these two guys are fighting in the main event of UFC 322. I know you said you thought Leon and Carlos was your favorite fight here. I think for me, it's got to be this one, even though we've known this is going to be the fight for months now, to see those two on the poster and just see what a huge fight it is. I mean, the Islam side can't be ignored. If he wins this, he will, of course, become, I think, the 11th fighter to win titles in two divisions. But the bigger one is he would tie Anderson Silva's winning streak for the longest winning streak in UFC history. 16 consecutive fights. I honestly never thought we'd see the day where that gets tied or beaten. Kamaru Usman was a Leon Edwards head kick away from tying that record, and it stopped short there. But here we are with Islam. This just feels very big time between these two, and can't ignore Jack Della Maddalena on an 18-fight winning streak in his own right.
Man, and I love Jack Della Maddalena's approach to fighting. I remember speaking to him on the post show once, and he was just, man, I just want to fight. And like that, just his mentality seemed so fresh, and it seemed so strong, and it was so infectious that I wanted to fight after talking to him. I was like, yo, I'm coming out of retirement. Yeah. But he's a breath of fresh air. And I'm with Brady on this one. I'm picking him to beat Islam.
Wow.
I'm picking him to beat Islam. I think that Craig Jones is the answer in this. I think Craig Jones's approach to MMA and using jiu-jitsu for MMA is the answer. I remember talking to somebody, and they were talking about, man, how are we going to beat the Dagestani style? And he was like, well, if we fight a Dagestani guy, we're going to spend 2 months just straight wrestling. And I was like, you're not going to catch up. I was like, we're going to do 2 months of just straight wrestling. I don't think that works. I think the answer lies within Craig Jones's approach of blending in a jiu-jitsu style that these guys aren't familiar with. Mm-hmm. And we've seen it when Alexander Volkanovski fought Islam. Mm-hmm. And we've seen it when Jack fought Bilal, and now he's got more time to work with Jack just on the little nuances and just different approaches, different grips, different angles, different positions. I think Jack's going to be very difficult to take down and hold down. He might get taken down, but I think he's going to be very difficult to hold down if he gets taken down. And I think on the feet, man, he's so precise that I think that he loses the first two rounds possibly, but I think he comes back, man, and does damage later in the fight.
Fascinating. Yeah, it's such a good matchup. Jack has improved immensely during that layoff he had before the Bilal fight. Like, he was doing a lot of technical stuff that we didn't see, like, you know, when he fought Basil Hafez and things like that. So he's definitely improved. And it seems like a lot of people agree with you. I mean, I know obviously Islam's team isn't going to say they're going to lose the fight, but Habib, Islam, everyone around, like, seems to be acknowledging that Jack is a badass and he's going to be a very difficult fight on this night. So it makes it more interesting that they're approaching it with such respect and praise.
Yeah, they're going to need to, because, you know, Jack, man, he's got long arms. He's accurate. He's got one punch fight changing ability. So those things can have an effect on Islam. And Islam, and take nothing away from Islam. Islam is a natural born winner, but, But I think he's gonna have to come with something a little different in order to get to Jack.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see, because when I talked to Islam right after it was announced he was vacating the belt, he said he was struggling to put on mass and the weight for this weight class. But it seems like over the past couple months that's changed. He looks, if you look at his social media, he looks fight ready right now. And he's still got a couple months to go. So we'll see what he can continue to do there. But the odds have him as the pretty big favorite here, like plus or minus 280 or so to kick things off. So the odds makers seem to like his chances quite good of winning this fight.
And I understand why. I would never take that bet though.
Do you think, like, if Jack is able to prevent consistent grappling sequences from Islam, like can Islam win this fight standing up from what you've seen with him, if it just turns into a kickboxing match?
No, I don't think Islam can win this if it's just a straight striking match. Like if he's forced to stand with him without the element of takedowns, like if he starts stuffing takedowns, like, and it won't happen early where he's just like stuffing takedowns repeatedly. It'll have to be something late where he's forcing Islam into taking bad shots, like from too far. And that happens normally somewhere around the third round. So after the third round, if he can force Islam to start taking bad shots and he's stuffing easy, then Islam just gives up on shooting and has to stand with him. Yeah, I don't think it's going to be good for him. Islam might end up getting knocked out in a situation like that.
If Jack does win that fight in that manner, we're going to have some very interesting discussions about his pound for pound placement, because, Bilal was on his, 12 or 13 fight unbeaten streak. He can stop Islam from tying the Anderson Silva record. Like, man, he's got to be up there in the top maybe three or four. I don't know.
Yeah, you'd have to put him up there. I mean, if he could beat Islam, I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. I mean, he beat Bilal. If he could beat Islam, yeah, you got to put him up there. Top five for sure. I mean, I don't know if you go as high as three, but I mean, you got to put him up there. I mean, and then considering that he's won 18 fights in a row, I mean, that's pretty damn good. It's pretty damn hard to do as well.
Yeah, and not just like, slipping on a banana peel or getting knocked out with a crazy shot by an Adriano Martins, as we saw Islam do. So like anything can happen.
Yeah.
To go just that many consecutive fights, like having an eye poke and the fight getting stopped on no contest, like just weird shit that can happen to have that many fights in a row where nothing went awry. I mean, look at John Jones. He got about as close as we saw, but even he had a couple moments, got disqualified.
and his fights weren't easy fights neither. I mean, he's had tough fights where, like, even against Gilbert Burns, like he was like losing like times where you thought he was going to get finished, and he's been able to come back and win that fight. And against Basil Hafez, like, some might argue that he did lose that fight, so you give him a pass on that one, but it's still a very difficult thing to do to win 18 fights in a row like he had.
100%, especially such a great story. Jack Del Maddalena lost his first two MMA fights and then hasn't lost since. Like, credit to him for sticking true to it. So he's the man. And I don't know though, if he loses here and Islam, begins a reign, are we having some like all-time GOAT discussions about Islam if he's able to go up and become a two-division champion? Because I think, people will make the comparisons, like if he beats Jack, that in my mind is a better quality win than Ilya beating Charles, just given where they're at in their careers, Jackson is prime, all that stuff. So I would have Islam back at number one pound for pound if he wins here. But I think we're talking about him as beyond that, one of the all-time greats with a win here.
Yeah, and there's no doubt about that. I mean, so if Jack had 18 wins in a row, how many has Islam had in a row? What is this? Yeah, he's had a lot in a row.
He's at 15 in a row, so he'll tie.
15 in a row. Yeah,
so those are all in the UFC. Jack is just 8-0 in the UFC.
Yeah, so 15 wins in a row in the UFC. Yeah, he's had a tremendous career. I mean, it's...
And eight straight finishes. His past eight fights have been finishes for Islam.
Yeah, he's special. There's no doubt about that. He's special. Mm-hmm. And if he can beat Jack and become a two division champion, you got to put him up there. Considerations for, and it's hard because like sometimes we don't like to give guys credit right now while they're still there. But just with those accomplishments, you got to start thinking about like, man, Mount Rushmore type stuff. But it's hard to say it now because he's still in it. It's easier to give him his props when he's gone.
For sure. I mean, dude, if Islam wins this belt and he beats like Shavkat and Brady and Ian Garry, next generation, like, holy shit, we're going to be talking about some serious stuff for him. But I don't know, like, win or lose, do we need to see Islam versus Topuria after this? Like, do you not want to see it if he loses and gets knocked out potentially if it goes that way? Like, do they need to make it if he wins just because it's such a big fight? Like, I don't know.
No, you can't do it. You can't do it. So we talked about this with the strawweight division.
Yeah.
You can move Whaley up and just let the strawweight division kind of settle itself out because like no one kind of cared. They were just like, just let them settle it. But there's too much other stuff going on in the lightweight and welterweight division to hold everybody up again to do Charles and Islam. There's just too much stuff going on. Gaethje waiting.
Yeah. No, go ahead. There's a lot of good guys there. What if Islam said, like, I'm going to vacate this belt and go back to lightweight? Then it's fine, right?
Yeah, then let's do that. Yeah, I'd actually be okay with that. Yeah. But you couldn't let Ilya go up to welterweight and fight.
You don't think he's a big enough star? Like, man, you can already promote Ilya Topuria so many different ways. You don't give him that chance to be the first fighter to ever win titles in three different UFC weight classes?
I mean, it's hard to say that, right? It's hard to say that. But I just, again, this is not a knock on Ilya, but this is me speaking for everybody else in the division. This is me standing up for Shavkat, me standing up for Brady, me standing up for if Carlos Prates wins, me standing up for those guys to say, man, we can't, like these guys have done everything in their power to try to get a shot. Let's let them get the shot. Now if they weren't settled, then we go, all right, you know what? Ilya, move up. Get the shot. But we can't let those guys who've done everything in their power to get recognized, just throw them again back in the dumpster and then let another dude come up and take their place.
Yeah, I agree. We saw, I mean, how long did it take to get turnover in the top five of welterweight? You know, get Colby Covington out of there and Masvidal and stuff. And now we finally have like this fresh new top five, and it would suck if all these guys had the brakes put on them. So I definitely agree with your sentiment there. We need the fighters to fight as often as possible to get these belts defended. It'll be interesting to see how everything changes in the Paramount era and how they build cards and how champions are booked and scheduled and all that stuff. It's going to be a whole different sport, I feel, in a few months here.
I'm so excited for this Paramount deal, man. I'm excited to see how this thing works out. See if I can't get on TV.
Yeah, we need you. I feel like they'll show you some love and get there. I mean, one of the things the UFC controls is production, right? That's always, Dana has been very clear that being, you know, point one on any broadcast deal they're going to do. So I'm sure you're loved over there, Dean. We see you getting more opportunities. I can't imagine a world where you get less.
Well, there's no other production. I mean, I'm not, you know, out there, you know, grading production companies, but I just can't imagine another production company that could do MMA the way the UFC does it, between like Zach Candido and just their level, their standard of what they expect from their people to deliver a product. It's just, it's on another level.
Yep. That is facts. All right, Dean. Well, I feel like that's a perfect bow. We started talking about the production, the commentary stuff, and here we are. We can end it on that. I know you got a flight to catch home here, so always appreciate your time, man. What are you working coming up here? You're not going to Paris, are you?
I am going to Paris. So,
I go home like a day, half a day.
I'll be home for 2 days, back in the lab with Jillian for 2 days. And I'm working with Amanda Nunes. So, we're working, man. We're working. I hit Jillian and drive over to work with Amanda.
Any tidbits or insights? Are they talking to Amanda? I know she's back in the pool. I know Kayla said, wave the freaking thing. Like, let's get this fight going right now. How far away from fight ready does Amanda feel after 2 years off?
So we've kind of timelined it out to where she can fight, be fight ready in December. We've kind of timed that out in terms of how we're going to structure her training so that it kind of times out to where she can peak in December. So she wants to fight in December. So we've timed it out to say, this is what we're going to do in camp so that when December comes around, we're ready to go. So we're excited about this. The story is so compelling. The fact that, you know, her coaches now are Roger Craw, and I've stepped in on her team, and we're both top team guys. And, you know, and she left. We all got kind of, we're like misfits of top team. So, yeah, this is a compelling story to be going and facing. And for me, it's good competition, but the storyline behind this, I think, is really good.
Hell yeah. Yeah. Hopefully it can get on that December pay-per-view. I'm sure that would be music to Kayla Harrison's ears to not have to cut weight over Christmas. So I think that's will be the hope of everyone involved to get this done before the holidays arrive. So, all right, Dean, get home, get some rest, safe travels to Paris, and we'll get you back on here soon, man. I appreciate your time as always.
All right, homie. Peace out, man.
And that does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you all for tuning in. As I said off the top, a bit of a surprise show here, but I thought it was worthy of taking the time here before things get crazy on the wedding week. So enjoy it. Enjoy UFC Paris that's coming up. As I said, might be another show, but unlikely, I'd say, on this week. So I'll see you guys coming up here in a week or two. Thank you always to Kamikaze, my man, for producing the show, Abby Saban. And thank you all for tuning in as always. Until next time, I will see you back here by the Bonfire.